You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Committee to Protect Journalists released its annual prison census this month, and the news was grim. More journalists were jailed in 2016 than in any year since 1990, when CPJ began keeping detailed records. The group also released a special report on journalists who were killed, including 18 of whom CPJ believes were murdered. Courtney Ratch is the advocacy director at CPJ, and she joins us now. Hello, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much.
How many journalists were imprisoned in 2016?
So this year we saw that there were 259 journalists jailed around the world, which is the record high since we began keeping records in 1990. The previous record was in 2012 when we had 232 journalists jailed around the world.
But that's not 259 new arrests. That's all the journalists are in jail?
Yes. So every year on December 1st, we conduct a prison census. Obviously, we spend much more time than just one day doing that. But it's basically recording the number of journalists in prison as of midnight on December 1st. Unfortunately, it's so difficult in many countries to even get information on journalists imprisoned and under arrest and being detained, that in order to do a really comprehensive global survey, we're doing that once a year and then trying to keep tabs throughout the year on what's happening to journalists.
Does that include reporters who are held by terrorist groups like ISIS?
It does not. It includes journalists who are imprisoned, and typically imprisonment is a function of government. We do keep track of journalists who are kidnapped and missing, which would often cover journalists who are, you know, taken by ISIS or other terrorist groups.
144 of the imprisoned journalists were internet-based. Are there just more internet-based reporters, or do regimes feel particularly threatened by the internet?
I think that the answer to that question is yes. There are definitely more people doing journalism, and obviously new technologies have enabled these people to do journalism in new ways and to disseminate information, to bypass traditional hierarchies, which has allowed more people to engage in journalism. But at the same time, we see that authorities have, I think, after kind of an initial stun after the uprisings of 2011, especially in the Middle East, really cracked down on a lot of freedom of expression online. And whereas in the past, it seemed that there were fewer laws governing journalism online and expression online, there are now oftentimes harsher laws punishing, you know, speech online. So there's a combination of factors at work. And I think also, obviously, most journalists are working in multiple medium. Many newspapers exist online. Radio stations exist online. So there are more people working on the internet.
As we said, 2016 has seen the most journalists in prison since CPJ started keeping track. So is the problem getting worse? You talked about new laws.
Right. So I think one of the reasons we're seeing such extreme numbers this year is because of Turkey. So Turkey is accounting for at least 81 journalists in jail, the highest number for any one country at any time, you know, that we've ever recorded. And Turkey is, you know, ostensibly a democratic country. But I think that we saw, you know, after the failed coup over the summer, that there's been a tremendous crackdown on the press. And we're seeing this around the world, both with the adoption of restrictive laws, cybercrime laws, anti-terrorism laws that are catching up journalists, and they're, you know, essentially designating journalistic practices as terrorism, coupled with, you know, leaders that want to control the information environment, militant groups and you know, drug cartels and other groups that want to control the information environment. So it's just become an increasingly dangerous place for journalists.
Well, Turkey is the worst right now. So far, 81 journalists have been jailed, although that may have gone up just recently. What are some of the other countries? What are some of the other worst offenders?
So, unfortunately, we see China continuing to top the list, and traditionally, China is among the worst of the worst. We also see Egypt. So last year, Egypt showed up as the second worst jailer of journalists. This year, it's the third worst. And that's pretty unusual because prior to the uprisings, there were very rarely journalists in jail. But under Sisi, we've seen an unprecedented crackdown on the press. I think Turkey and Egypt are among the most concerning in terms of the backward sliding there. And then we also see Eritrea and Ethiopia in the top five jailers, and that's, again, pretty typical. Eritrea is an incredibly closed, repressive society with very, very limited press freedom, if any, independent press. And Ethiopia, as we know, has been going through tremendous tumult, and they, again, do not have any respect for press freedom or independent journalism and have done their best to cow any journalists who attempt to report independently into subservience or silence them by jailing them or forcing them into exile.
Should I assume that North Korea is not on the list because there are no independent journalists there?
Right, right. So some of the most, we do look every few years, we do a report on the most censored countries, and North Korea is, of course, at the top of that list. But yes, in many countries that you might expect to see on the list of jailed journalists, you actually don't see that because there simply are not journalists, you know, pushing the bounds or working independently who would get jailed.
How does CPJ learn about an arrest?
That's a great question. I mean, it comes in many different forms. We actively investigate. We are known among the journalistic communities, and so oftentimes other journalists or news organizations will reach out to us and let us know, our NGO partners. Sometimes people let us know on social media, but usually it's, you know, through the network. It's because we're well connected within these countries to journalists working on the ground. We have a research staff based in New York, and then we have foreign correspondents working with CPJ around the world. So, but it can be very difficult. You know, in Iran, for example, it's very challenging to find out information about who is in prison, but we think it's so important that these journalists don't go unnoticed and that, you know, they are accounted for and they aren't forgotten.
But Iran is not on your top five list.
Not this year. Not this year. So there were actually a slew of journalists who were arrested in 2009 and served their sentences and were let out this year. So that's one of the reasons we don't see Iran at the top of the list this year.
When you learn that someone has been arrested, what's your next step?
So it really depends. We have to assess how we can be most helpful and what the journalist, their family, or their media organization wants. So this could be directly reaching out to the local authorities. It might be writing a letter. It could be, you know, doing something public or private. You know, we just have to see what is going to work, you know, in a specific case. And obviously in some countries, there are authorities that are more receptive to, you know, communication and pressure around, you know, not jailing journalists. And then there are other countries, you know, like Vietnam, Eritrea, Ethiopia, who we really can't directly communicate with, who don't care about international condemnation. And so in those cases, you know, we will use mechanisms like the UN Human Rights Council. We might write letters. We might try to get third-party governments like the United States or the European Union or the World Bank or, you know, who, any way, we look for any way that we can bring about pressure. And in some cases, we do public campaigns. So there's a journalist in prison in Egypt right now named Mahmoud Abu Zayed, who goes by Shawkan. And he is a photojournalist who was covering the massacre in Rabaa and was jailed and accused of terrorism. And so we've been doing a big public campaign on his case, again, trying to make it, you know, difficult and uncomfortable for these governments to continue imprisoning journalists.
Are regimes ever embarrassed into releasing them?
I think so, yes. In Ethiopia, for example, they had jailed the Zone 9 bloggers, which was a collective of independent young journalists. And we put up a lot of public pressure along with other groups, and we reached out to the U.S. government trying to make it uncomfortable when President Obama was going to Ethiopia and used that leverage of a presidential trip to try to get the Ethiopians to release the Zone 9 bloggers, and they did.
I'm speaking with Courtney,
yeah.
Courtney Ratch, advocacy director at the Committee to Protect Journalists. She, before she was at CPJ, she worked with UNESCO Section for Freedom of Expression. She has also worked as a journalist in the United States and Middle East for Al Arabiya in Dubai, the Daily Star in Lebanon, and the New York Times. Nearly three-quarter of the journalists in jail face anti-state charges. What kinds of stories earn that label?
You know, whatever the governments don't want to be portrayed. So I think a great example is in Turkey, where one of the most prominent journalists there, Can Dündar, was covering an exclusive story about Turkish arms transfers to Syria. And this is a hugely important story, not just in Turkey, but for the world, right? I mean, you've got the Syrian conflict is of critical national importance. Well, he was accused of terrorism. He was put on trial. There was actually someone who tried to assassinate him when he was on trial, and then he was let out pending a retrial and was out of the country when the coup happened, and now is a wanted man in exile. Other stories, like I mentioned, Shao Kahn, just covering protests, being in the wrong place at the wrong time. So, you know, being in southern Turkey where the PKK or other state-designated terrorist groups are located can be equated with terrorism. Similarly, if, you know, trying to cover banned groups like the Muslim Brotherhood or trying to cover ISIS can be equated with terrorism. And so we're seeing that it becomes very difficult to cover some of the most important stories of the current era because simply having contact with or traveling to areas that might be related to terrorism then gets these journalists being accused of terrorism. And we really see this around the world. And even in democratic countries, we see, for example, in the U.S., journalists have been being pulled out at airports for secondary screening. Several journalists who have worked in the Middle East and have asked for their access to their electronic devices and want to know about their contacts and their stories in the Middle East. A lot of them who have been covering the work of, you know, the ISIS terrorist group or other things like that. So, you know, it's really a trend we see around the world.
And also people in North Dakota, journalists were arrested in North Dakota for covering the story of the Indian protests against the pipeline.
That's true. And we also saw that Edward Ou, an award-winning photojournalist, was turned back at the U.S. border and not allowed to go cover that. I think that is different, though, because they're not being equated with terrorism. I think that's more about, you know, trying to restrict access and control the narrative and you know, it's deeply problematic. But I think that, you know, what we're seeing in China, in Egypt, in Ethiopia is that anyone doing any independent journalism is being equated with terrorism. And we see that, you know, the anti-terrorism initiatives that the UN and the countering violent extremism agenda creates cover for repressive regimes to leverage those, you know, that agenda for their own domestic purposes to, you know, restrict reform efforts, restrict criticism, and retaliate against those who dare to go against those restrictions.
We have to take a little break. We'll come back with more from Courtney Ratch of the Committee to Protect Journalists. But first this. We're back with Courtney Ratch of the Committee to Protect Journalists, and we are talking about the problems journalists face around the world, arrest and murder. Why was Hatice Duman arrested in Turkey? What was she charged with?
Most likely terrorism, as all of the journalists arrested in Turkey have been charged with terrorism. Again, I think just being a member of a Gulenist press, which is the kind of opposition in Turkey, has led to several arrests, and many of the journalists that we have documented there have been arrested on charges of terrorism. But we are also seeing that that is expanding now beyond just, you know, Gulenist press to actually anyone who is independent, anyone who is seen as potentially being, you know, against or in opposition to Erdogan. There really is this incredible crackdown on anyone who is not towing the government line.
She was the owner and a news editor of a socialist weekly, obviously not a Gulenist, but there have been a number of Gulenist news outlets also closed down, 100 or over 100 of them. This is in a democracy?
Right. So, in fact, what we saw is that the crackdown on the press started a bit before the coup. And then after the coup, the attempted coup, there was a huge, tremendous backlash against the press. As you noted, more than 100 outlets have been closed. Hundreds of journalists arrested, detained. Their passports have been confiscated or they have been prevented from traveling. I mentioned Can Dündar earlier, the award-winning Turkish journalist and editor-in-chief of Cumhuriyet. His wife has been prevented from traveling. So it's really this large-scale crackdown. And, of course, we know that this extends beyond the journalistic community, but certainly we see that journalists are often like the canary in the coal mine. You see restrictions, you know, the targeting of journalists before you might see that more broadly in a country that is engaging in, a in repression.
What about China? Yang Jianshui, a freelance internet journalist, was sentenced to 12 years for subverting state power. What could he have done?
You know, in China, it's really tough to know what is going to be off limits or not. You're talking about Chen Changshui, who was working on the internet. He was charged with fraud and extortion. And he was basically a after he was detained after his colleague, a freelance photographer, was detained for carrying a false press card. And we actually see that this issue of taking, you know, of requiring press cards or accreditation as a way to be able to crack down on journalists who don't have that press card, even though it doesn't adhere to international standards. So he was accused, she was accused of taking money from local officials while reporting on several stories, which he denied. But, and I think also Human Rights in China has written about his case, and we have done our investigation and determined that he was arrested in retaliation for his journalism, and it appears that those are trumped-up charges.
Well, he spent 10 years in prison for his opposition to the military crackdown on demonstrators at Tiananmen Square in 1989, so he is obviously a target of the government. To the best of your knowledge, what's the longest a current journalist has been imprisoned?
So the longest imprisoned journalists are in Uzbekistan. And they have been in prison since 1999. So one of those is Yusuf Ruzimuradov. And he was a reporter for an opposition newspaper. And he and his colleague, Mohammed Bekchanov, were both accused on anti-state charges and imprisoned in 1999. And I believe they are the longest imprisoned journalists. And we, you know, try to get information on them. It's very, very difficult. But, you know, there has been a transition now in Uzbekistan in the leadership there. And so we are going to be sending a letter to the authorities requesting information and requesting the release of these two journalists.
CPJ also released a special study on journalists who were killed. How many were killed?
So we documented at least 48 journalists who were killed in relation to their work in 2016.
What you've said is motive confirmed.
Correct, right. So we have to confirm when we document a case as being, you know, a journalist killed for their work. We have to document that they were killed because of their journalism and, of course, that they were a journalist. So, for example, there was that plane crash of the sports team in Brazil, and there were several journalists on board, but that was, you know, they were not killed due to their journalism, so they did not appear in our numbers.
And this recent Russian plane that went down had journalists as well. And then there are journalists who were killed in combat, so you don't include them either?
Oh, no, we do include combat. So actually this year we saw that unlike traditionally we see that about two-thirds of the journalists killed each year are actually murdered for their work. This year was an anomaly because we saw more than half of the journalists killed this year were killed in combat or crossfire. And this is actually the first time we've seen that high of a percentage since we started keeping records. And the reason we're counting that is because they are sent there to cover that issue. They are there as journalists. And again, when they're killed in combat, we're looking that they were there because of their journalism, not that they were out getting milk and happened to get killed. Right. So it really is looking at each and every case and whether it was related to journalism or not.
So should I assume that Syria was the most deadly country for journalists?
Yes, that is a safe assumption. And in fact, it has been the most dangerous country, most deadly country for journalists since 2011 for the past 5 years.
And then Iraq?
Yes, Iraq and Yemen actually are both tied, sadly, for second place with 6 journalists killed in each country, which made Iraq the third most deadly country for the fourth year in a row.
Historically, weren't 3/4 of the journalists who died singled out for their work?
So they were singled out for murder because of their work. 2/3, traditionally, murder has been the leading cause of killing among journalists. And so that was an interesting shift this year. And we're not really sure what exactly accounts for that shift, but we know that there are several violent conflicts happening. You know, that journalists are taking great risks to try to go out to the front lines to bring us the news about what is happening. But, you know, thankfully, we've seen that fewer journalists are murdered this year than traditionally we've seen.
And do you determine whether the murderer was doing it because of something, a grudge against the journalist's story, or whether the government had ordered the murder?
Yes. So we do look at the cause of fire in journalists murdered. And so we'll look at who we believe was behind the murder, of course, based on documentation and evidence. And we look at for example, in 2016, about 58% of those murdered, we suspect a political group, about 23% military officials. And we do this for each and every year. And we also look at, you know, whether they were local or freelance journalists, local or foreign journalists, freelance or staff journalists, you know, the gender. So we really try to get into the details about each and every journalist. But it's not just statistics. We're also, we have a, you know, a documentation on each and every person, the person who's behind, you know, the number.
Isn't CPJ investigating the deaths of 27 additional reporters?
We are. As I mentioned, it's incredibly difficult to determine in some countries why a journalist was killed, whether it was directly for their journalism or not. Obviously, it's also very difficult in conflict zones to determine, you know, in places like Syria or Iraq, especially, you know, where journalists are being killed at such a high rate if it was because of their journalism. And so, you know, we basically continue to investigate as long as we can. And we have at least 27 more journalists that we're trying to determine if their deaths were related to their work.
I'm speaking with Courtney Ratch, who is the Advocacy Director at the Committee to Protect Journalists. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. What's the CPJ Impunity Index?
So the Impunity Index looks at the countries where there are 5 or more murders of journalists in each year, and looks at the percentage of journalist murders as a percentage of the population. And so what we see on the Impunity Index is that a handful of countries account for the vast majority of cases of impunity. And what we mean by impunity, you know, when we're looking at journalists, is that, as we said, 2/3 of journalists historically who are killed each year are murdered. And in the vast, vast majority of cases, there is no justice brought for those murders. So 9 out of 10 journalist murders are really never brought to resolution. There's no justice in those cases. And so, excuse me, every year we put out an index that looks at where impunity is rampant. This year we saw Somalia, Iraq, and Syria leading the pack. And of course, all 3 of those countries are in conflict and have, you know, poorly functioning governance systems. And so, you know, so many journalists have been murdered and there's been no resolution.
And the Philippines is next with its new leader, Duterte, who seems to think it's okay to kill anybody involved in drug activity. Should I assume that that rate may go up in 2017?
So I would hate to make assumptions about a world leader murdering journalists. I think that the reason we see the Philippines on the list is primarily because of the massacre in 2009 of dozens of journalists. It's known as the Maguindanao Massacre, and none of those journalists have been brought to justice yet. And that is why they are still on the impunity index, and why they are at the top of the list, in these journalist murders. But I don't think, I certainly hope that we don't see that becoming worse.
And Russia, it ranks 10th. I would assume that's an improvement.
I don't think that we can necessarily say it's an improvement for Russia. I think what we see is the index looks at the past 10 years. And so in many of these cases, in places like Russia or elsewhere where there's a lack of institutional capacity and there's no political will to investigate these murders, that even after 10 years when there's no resolution, sadly, they fall off our index, as our methodology just covers the past 10 years. So I would not say that there has been much of an improvement in Russia.
You actually have a video on the CPJ website that asks why the killers of journalists are getting away with murder. Have you come up with any answers?
Well, I think one of the answers is that governments lack political will. So we have done research into why there is such endemic impunity, and it's a lack of political will, and in some cases, a lack of institutional capacity. So institutional capacity is definitely a challenge. If you don't have a functioning investigatory police, you don't have a functioning judiciary, that can make it very difficult. Obviously, journalists are not the only ones who suffer from a lack of justice in Syria or Iraq or Somalia, right? They have a lot of failed institutions in those countries. But then in countries like the Philippines, Mexico, Brazil, these democratic countries that show up on the impunity index and routinely, are countries where journalists are routinely murdered for their work, I think there is a lack of political will. And I do think that we've seen some progress at the United Nations and other venues where countries are increasingly calling on, their fellow countries to address this issue. But we need to see more of that. So, why do you have countries that are members of the community of democracies leading in the impunity index, right? Philippines is a democracy. It should really address these issues. So I think it needs to be, more pressure from fellow governments to address these issues. And also there should be an expectation that they report on what the status of investigation into these murders are. So last year, CPJ, along with several other groups, started really lobbying the states to respond to UNESCO's request for information on the status of the investigations. And we saw significantly more responses. But in the past, half of the countries would just ignore requests for information on the status of killing. So it's a long and slow battle, but I think we're starting to see at least a little bit of progress.
Wasn't there a time when journalists were seen as a protected group, the same way that the Red Cross was, but now they seem to be targets? Have attitudes changed? Have the nature of journalism changed? Has the nature of telling the story changed?
Absolutely. I think that's an accurate description. I think that, in the past, both political groups and militant groups and everyone depended on journalists, which were the people with access to, the means of dissemination to television and newspapers. They relied on journalists to get their stories out. So they were granted access. They were more protected. And that didn't mean that journalists weren't killed or murdered. But, in many cases, they were wanted to be there to tell the story. But now, obviously, with the shift in modern communications technologies, anyone can go directly to the public and bypass journalists. And so I think that journalists have really lost their privileged role in the information cycle, and that has put them at greater risk. right? Government leaders no longer need journalists. They can take directly to social media. Militant and terrorist groups don't need journalists to tell their stories. They can also go right to social media. And so it is, you know, a situation where journalists have lost some of that power that may have kept them safe in the past.
Hasn't CPJ written to Vice President-elect Mike Pence requesting a meeting? What do you hope to talk about with him?
Yes, we have requested a meeting with Mike Pence. And the reason we reached out to him is because he was one of the co-founders of the Congressional Press Freedom Caucus. And we wrote to him because of our concern with some of the rhetoric and behavior of the President-elect Trump and the administration and supporters towards journalists. And you may have seen also the unprecedented statement that our board put out about concerns with a Trump presidency and its impact on press freedom, both in terms of, you know, these threats to open up the libel laws, the lack of any sort of openness to the press, you know, not holding press conferences. And more importantly, I think even not being seen as a leader internationally on press freedom. You know, we were talking earlier about what can we do when journalists are imprisoned. Well, in many cases, we've asked the U.S. to intervene with its ally, you know, to request the release of a person or, you know, put pressure on them. How do we do that if an administration is not a leader on press freedom? And this is not to say that the Obama administration was without critique. We actually did a report in 2013 looking at their claims of being the most transparent administration in history and, you know, found severe problems. But I think that those problems are going to be multiplied in an administration if it continues with some of the threats it's made and, you know, deep concerns about the moral leadership of the United States on press freedom in the international arena.
We don't know whether Donald Trump, the candidate who revoked the Washington Post press credentials to cover his campaign events because he didn't like their coverage in an article, Donald Trump seems to connect President Obama to Orlando shooting, and also singled out NBC reporter Katie Turr at one of his rallies in front of her because he didn't like her reporting. We don't know if that will extend into his presidency. Perhaps it just helped him with certain voters. But this story will continue.
And one thing we see is that, you know, the presidential and, you know, the highest leaders, how they talk about the press has an impact on the safety of the press. And we see that when, and we've seen this in countries around the world, that, you know, when journalists are denigrated, when their profession is denigrated, it creates an unsafe environment for journalists where attacks become permitted. And that is one of the reasons that, you know, we're concerned about what the candidate said and kind of the precedents that set. So, of course, we hope for improvement, but I think as of yet, you know, we have not received a response to our meeting request with Vice President-elect Pence. But, you know, I think there's no time like the present to show leadership on this issue.
Courtney Ratch is the advocacy director at the Committee to Protect Journalists. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your attention to this issue.